It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the climate around diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, in Wisconsin with the chair of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus. In a post on X, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss labels DEI practices as cancerous on universities of Wisconsin campuses. Call in with a question. Share your views, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Democratic Representative Dora Drake of the 11th Assembly District on the north side of Milwaukee. Representative Drake, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me back this morning. Glad to be here.
Well, lay it out for us. Why do you oppose the deal struck by legislative Republican leaders and leaders of the state university system over funding and campus diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Well, I think all of us in our state believe that our value is in diversity, knowing that we want every group, regardless of your race, your gender, your sexual orientation, your upbringing, to be celebrated here in our state. And we know that there's strength in our numbers. And so if we look at the data, just seeing how there are still disparities amongst different racial groups across the state, we should want to support measures around diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, frankly, just speaking on behalf of the Legislative Black Caucus, you know, we still have some of the worst disparities, you know, across the country. You know, we can talk about education, making sure people have access to job opportunity, health disparities, mental health, you name it. African-Americans have some of the poorest disparities when it comes to our state in terms of access to opportunity and capital. And so when there's a deal brokered between Speaker Voss and President Jay Rothman to, you know, get funding for the UW system, it's nothing more than a power breach on behalf of Speaker Voss to circumvent the whole legislative process and, quite frankly, abuse their power and hold the UW system hostage for funding in order for, and quite frankly, in order to get pay raises, they had to attack diversity, equity, inclusion, which is just wrong.
The Joint Committee on Employment Relations convenes tomorrow afternoon to take up the universities of the system pay adjustment. What is your message to this committee?
My committee is that, you know, now that the deal is taken, it is our hope, not even our hope, we will be looking and making sure that there are folks holding, that are people that are holding accountable the needs to the students that students of color and to the service people that need the services because our faculty, our students didn't even know that this deal even was in the process until legislative Democrats and myself and members of the Black Caucus caught wind of it late last week. And so my hope is that as we move forward, that diversity, equity, inclusion needs to be at the forefront of every conversation and not continue to be something that's negotiated.
How much could DEI programs be affected at state universities if the deal is finalized?
Well, I think that there was in the deal that 43 of the positions would be frozen, right? Mm-hmm. So that means there'd be a cap on the positions that the UW system already has. That means current positions that are there already, we could lose them over attrition during time. And quite frankly, I fear that taking this deal does more harm than good when it comes to supporting our students and our faculty.
I wonder, you know, Governor Evers had released a statement afterwards, after the vote, saying he disagrees with the decision of the regents. And I'm curious, mm-hmm. if you were in that position as governor, how would you respond if you were governor?
Well, you know, I think the governor makes his own decisions. But frankly, I do think that we are in a time and a place in history where there are some lines that shouldn't be crossed. You know, we're seeing that this isn't just happening in a vacuum in Wisconsin. We're seeing this happen in different parts of the country where Texas and Florida took, you know, made sure that any type of initiatives around diversity, equity, inclusion were removed. And so, in this movement of really attacking these efforts, I think, regardless of whoever's in position or in charge, we need to make a clear statement that DEI is non-negotiable because we can't continue to make decisions and deals on the backs of people that identify as my students of color, or underrepresented groups. And quite frankly, I think there was a line that needed to be drawn here.
Dora Drake, Democratic State Representative, chairs the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus as we talk about a deal struck between Republican leaders in the state legislature and the state university system. And the deal would expand state aid to universities in exchange for limits on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. You can join in. Questions and comments along the way. The number to join is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Drake, the conservative organization Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty supports this deal. And in a statement, President Rick Essenberg says much DEI training promotes a racialized view of the world, which we have struggled to overcome. What do you make of that statement?
I guess my response to this statement is it is ignorant in a way, and this is why. If we are discussing DEI, is not divisive, and it's not it does not attack a certain group of people that some people may think that it is. DEI is merely us being honest and truthful about what's happened in our own country, in our own neighborhoods, and our own experiences. And that means we have to take the good, the bad, and the ugly. When we try to, diminish and erase parts of our history because people are uncomfortable, that's how these issues stay. That's how we keep the status quo. And so diversity, equity, and inclusion is merely a way of making sure that we respect and we acknowledge one's humanity for all its parts, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so if we're concerned that, it's racialized, you can't tell me that if you look at the data, that there are disparities or inconsistencies due to someone's race, demographic, or sexual orientation. So the data doesn't lie. And that's why these programs still need to be implemented, regardless of what the UW Board of Regents voted for. The issue is still there and it still needs to be addressed, regardless of what people try to say or do.
The Legislative Black Caucus has raised concerns over how the deal was discussed by the university system leaders in a closed door meeting. Do you plan to try blocking the deal in court? What are those next steps?
Well, next steps, we did get the memo from Legislative Council that the meeting that was held, I believe it was last week Tuesday already, was done illegally. And so next steps are filing a formal complaint with the Dane County's DA, and I'm in the process of doing the paperwork as we speak. And I think right there we'll see what next steps are. But I think more importantly, we need to be asking our UW system leaders in what ways are they still committed? It's because we've been hearing time and time again, President Jay Rothman say that they're still committed. But I actually wanted to see what those steps look like now that there's a freeze on DEI positions and that the program that they had to hire diverse faculty is removed. And my argument is, they've shared that these positions would be reimagined for student success. Well, we know that these positions that are now frozen or programs that are removed were areas that could help someone's student success. It's because these were spaces where different students could come and process things with each other that maybe get additional resources and support in ways that maybe you wouldn't see in other spaces. And so DEI is another form of student success. And I want to see what the UW Board of Regents, what President Jay Rothman plan to do to ensure that now that this deal has passed?
What I'm hearing is show us, don't just tell us. Really,
exactly.
Okay. Democratic Representative Dora Drake of Milwaukee chairs the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus. You have a line to the lawmaker. Call in with a question, add your perspective to the discussion. 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ahead of the next floor period, a month away, we explore policy initiatives of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus with its chair. And you can be part of the discussion, call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Democratic Representative Dora Drake of Milwaukee is with us. Let's bring on a call now. Paul is in Summit. Paul, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the program and for the courage of your guest. I am a career educator, and I've been trained in diversity, equity, and inclusion much of my career. I've seen the wonderful effects of it on my students. There's a huge kind of gap between many educators and what their kids are going through, where they've come from. And I've just seen how it has changed the understanding, my own understanding, as well as the understanding of the staff. And it's just the bottom line is it helps kids to be successful and to feel like they're accepted and appreciated. What more do we want? So I've just seen a lot of positive effects. And again, thank you to the courage of your guest. And thanks for having the show.
Paul, thanks for calling in. Representative Drake, Paul focused on outcomes, as he said, going through DEI training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think what he shared was exactly what we hear a lot of teachers and faculty share, that they've seen DEI as a positive thing. I was doing an interview last week, Friday, and another educator called in and shared just how much not only they've learned, but seeing how it's impacted their students. And so when they got word of this deal, they were quite frankly appalled, because they know that all their kids should be valued and celebrated for, regardless of their backgrounds or their differences. And so when I commend him for what he does as an educator, just because we don't support our educators as much as we should, but two, they are on the front lines of what our students deal with and what they see. And so when we are being told that these initiatives help with student success, there shouldn't be efforts to remove DEI. There should be efforts to strengthen it. And one thing I think I'll add as well, there were some teachers, AFT,
American 12, Federation of Teachers.
They, you know, put out a statement when they got word of the deal as well. And they didn't want to take pay raises if it meant that these services would be removed. Because, again, I think I know and believe that educators know that these benefit our students and we would see greater results.
About a year has passed since you were elected leader of the Legislative Black Caucus. What are your priorities for 2024?
So I think moving forward, we have seen not just across this state, but I think nationally, how there has been deliberate attacks to pull back some of the protections that we've seen for African Americans. So I think moving forward, we'll be looking at measures to strengthen those, whether that's around housing, whether that's around what's it called, redistricting, or even education specifically, because we've seen a lot of attacks on those this year. Those are things that you can look forward from us. And I know that some of us are currently starting to plan for next year's Black History Month program as well. So those are some of the things that people can anticipate moving into next year.
One item you didn't bring up is justice. Last month, Democrats in the legislature mm-hmm. introduced this package of 17 bills related to criminal justice. Which measures mm-hmm. in the package take priority for you?
Oh, goodness. Quite frankly, I don't think one takes over each other because each of them are so important. You know, as Democrats, we know that our communities are stronger when they're safer. And we also know that there can be preventative measures to ensure that there is public safety while addressing criminal justice reform as well. And so I believe many of the bills that came out during that rollout dealt with victim services, buying back guns, or efforts around housing. Those are all things that are all key components of what it means to have a strong and safe community. And so I don't believe that one specific bill has a stronger priority because, quite frankly, I believe every community and every is a public need that everyone should have.
The package includes a proposal that you support to amend the state constitution and, quote, ban slavery in all forms, even in jails and prisons. Would adding this language to the Constitution affect how the Evers administration is running state prisons?
I believe it would, just because we, you know, Wisconsin still has the highest rate for mass incarceration for African Americans. And so to remove that constitutional amendment, I think would have great measures on what it means to move things forward in terms of how people are treated in our prison systems, what that means with DOJ. And I will state and grant that DOJ and Governor Evers have taken positive steps towards addressing issues on criminal justice reform. But with that being said, there's always things that can be done better. And so I believe that having this constitutional amendment would take us in the right direction. That's gone far too long without being addressed.
Can you give examples of what would fall under slavery in all forms in a jail or prison setting?
Well, I think what that will look like is, say, it would determine what how people are being treated in and out of prisons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that if someone's going through the process addressing if there's any racial profiling, should an officer, you know, do that to someone on the street, or even currently in our jail systems, you know, having workers only be paid several cents for the work that they get paid for a corporation. Those are things where things can be addressed to move things forward and with the hope, well, not with the hope, knowing that those things would be changed.
Talking with Democratic State Representative Dora Drake of Milwaukee, leader of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus. You can join in with questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You're the co-author of a bill that would make period products free for people in prisons and jails. Why should tax dollars cover those expenses?
Well, quite frankly, as a woman, there shouldn't be a tax on period products anyway, I would argue. And so just as we shouldn't be taxed for those products and are, you know, out in the public, just because someone's incarcerated, that doesn't mean that they should pay a higher tax for that. That's a basic right. That's a human need. If you or I were sitting in a cell, you know, and we were going through that time of month and we had to pay extra on top of all the other fees that we have to pay for, well, then I may not even have enough to purchase those products if I am incarcerated. So now that's an issue around health. That's an issue around self-dignity and, quite frankly, just human right. And so if anyone knows and values the need of making sure that someone's basic need and access to health is available, I think all of us can agree that that's something that we should have in our prison system.
And we've seen Democrats working on this issue. In October, State Senator Melissa Agard introduced similar legislation that would make menstrual products free and available at state, local, and school buildings. I would imagine you would support that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Any products that women should not, women or people that have, that use these products should not have to pay extra, because again, those are things that we need just for our own daily health. And so, having an additional tax or fee added to that, is unfair in my opinion, and those things should be changed.
In our final moments together, one other of the 17 bills in this package jumps out, raising the minimum wage to $2.33 an hour for people currently incarcerated. What is behind the jump here in the wage?
Yeah, and that was sort of what I was speaking to earlier about, you know, people that are incarcerated who get paid pennies, you know, for the work they do. You know, it's again about making sure that people that are incarcerated aren't working for pennies and then not having a real strong foot to stand on, one. And then two, again, it goes back to the need of human decency and a basic right. Just because people are incarcerated, they shouldn't be treated poorly.
Representative Drake, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate. Glad to be here.
Democratic Representative Dora Drake, chair of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus, represents the 11th Assembly District in Milwaukee. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Governor Tony Evers' Task Force on Workforce and Artificial Intelligence is 30 people charged with developing an advisory plan for the state and how different sectors of our economy will navigate AI and technology transformations underway. First public task force meeting was held 7 weeks ago, and we check in on the committee's work. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Nadia Johnson is CEO of Milky Way Tech Hub, serves on the task force. Nadia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. What are you learning so far as a member of this committee?
A ton. It's been amazing to watch so many folks come together to gain a really good understanding of the impact of AI and how it's impacting our workforce. So been learning a lot about how we can make sure that we're able to advance AI, but do so in an equitable way for our workforce.
This strikes me as such a broad swath, a broad area that our society is grappling with. How is the task force taking on this, you know, these concepts, because they could go in so many different directions?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot to consider when it comes to artificial intelligence, right? So much is happening in the space, especially since it's becoming increasingly democratized and in the hands of the everyday person. So the structure of the task force has been broken down into three committees. There's the Industries, Occupations, and Skills Committee. There's the Equity and Economic Opportunity Committee, which is the one that I serve on. And then there's the Workforce Development and Educational Solutions Committee. And the idea is that these three committees are going to, you know, work together to support Governor Evers' administration in developing the right policies and the right solutions, again, to make sure that as AI continues to advance, Wisconsin is leading in the space.
And you want to ensure inclusivity and diversity in the development and implementation of AI. How could Wisconsin take steps to succeed in this goal?
Yeah, I think it's there's a number of things that, you know, we're considering within the equity committee. One of the first things that comes to mind is just figuring out how can we connect what we're calling underutilized talent pools to these different jobs that are servicing now surrounding artificial intelligence. How do we equip them with the in-demand skills? How do we figure out what gaps currently exist? And in turn, start to propose solutions that can support career advancement. You know, some of the conversations that I'm having in community, it's just that there are a lot of folks, and I'm sure you've heard this narrative, that are, afraid that, oh, they might lose their jobs, right? AI might be, taking over to the point where they're going to have to look for a new job, or find themselves displaced. And so we want to make sure that this doesn't happen, right? And that the people are well positioned to thrive in this new time where AI is taking over.
How do you use AI in your daily work or, in the workings of Milky Way Tech Hub?
Well, I use AI often. So by trade, I consider myself to be a computational scientist, and so in research, I carry out or I work on natural language processing. Interestingly enough, these are the same models that back the latest and greatest technologies, ChatGPT or Claude or Bard. These are the AI bots that people are using. So within Milky Way Tech Hub, interestingly enough, my staff, we like to call ChatGPT Charlie. So I use Charlie on a regular basis to answer, some basic questions, but also to solve some of the more difficult things as well. So outside of, using ChatGPT, my main job as a founder and CEO of Milky Way Tech Hub is figuring out ways to educate community on all things AI, making sure that we are making AI more accessible, reaching the right folks, and creating a narrative that supports inclusivity and equity in the space.
How big are the education gaps, the literacy, digital literacy gaps in AI specifically?
That's a great question. What I'm seeing, I go into different schools, me and my staff, we go into different schools, and we're seeing a difference for sure. And I think it really is dependent on the teachers or the educators' mindsets. Okay. So when I go into some schools, there are educators that are really leaning in and understand the impact of AI and how it's impacting how we navigate society and wanting their students to dive in and to learn more about AI. And then there are other educators who are a bit fearful of it. They actually ban students from using AI within their classrooms. And the difference is it's pretty large, right? Because when I go into the schools where the educators are embracing AI, we're seeing students talk about prompt engineering, students working on skills or developing skills that support them in the field of AI, meaning gaining an understanding of how artificial intelligence is going to impact their career.
And it's a tricky balance. Like, how do you strike that balance between, putting up limitations on AI, putting up those guardrails for students, and then, on the flip side, still really embracing the technology to ensure our economy is responsive in Wisconsin?
I think it's just important for educators to gain a sense of responsibility that, yes, we know that AI is taking on the world in such a way where it's transforming how we navigate society. So it is important for us to educate students on how to use it, on what it is, on how to leverage it to advance their careers. I think without doing that, we will likely find ourselves behind. And so there, I go into certain schools where they are banning AI, and the students, they don't know what AI is. They are not technically savvy in that space. And I feel that this is going to put them at a great disadvantage. So yes, there is a balance. I think my advice to educators is to, one, educate themselves on how to leverage AI, but then also adopt the curriculum so that we're asking questions that are of our students that are going to require them to be more critical thinkers. I think the days of, write me a book report are long gone. I think we have to readjust our curriculum where students can use AI, but do so in a way that still encourages critical thinking.
Nadia Johnson, recently appointed to the governor's AI task force as we talk about artificial intelligence and Wisconsin. You can join in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Nadia, there are 30-some people from all walks of industries, business, politics, academia, government on this task force. You know, how does the group plan to unite around a list of policy recommendations?
Yep. So as mentioned, there are the three committees has been put in place. And it's been exciting to watch and observe these different folks with diverse backgrounds come together to, again, understand how AI is impacting us and our economy, our workforce. The idea is that we go into these breakouts. We meet every so often, and we come up with solutions that are specific to our committee. And so then we come up with topics, opportunity areas, and challenges that we then present back to the broader team. And the idea is that Governor Evers and his team will take all of this advice and be able to consolidate it in a way where they're able to put forth the best policies for Wisconsin. So we've been able to, within the Equity and Economic Opportunity Committee, come up with a number of opportunities and identify specific challenges that we've been able to present. Some of them around opportunities, just figuring out how to connect to existing programs, figuring out what existing programs exist, and then finding ways to support those programs here in Wisconsin, whether it be investing or providing resources that will help to scale the education and awareness of AI here in Wisconsin.
So really taking that inventory as the initial step to see what is out there right now.
Yep, you got it.
Well, the larger orbit here in August, the governor and Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss each established task forces on AI. And we had on Republican Representative Nate Gustafson, who chairs the speaker's task force. And Gustafson said, talked about a potential overlap between the two groups.
There may be a little bit, but I think we have a little bit more of a broader scope of what we're looking at. So in general, again, we're looking more on the private sector side, whereas I feel the governor's task force might be a little bit more on the public sector. So overall, we're just trying to put AI within a reasonable confinement, but also letting it flourish as it continues to be developed.
Nadia, what is different about the governor's task force from the speaker's task force?
There likely is some overlap, and that's okay. I think that the purpose for this particular task force is, again, to make sure that we're finding solutions for Wisconsin, to make sure that as AI continues to advance, we're able to incorporate AI in various fields such as manufacturing, transportation, healthcare, agricultural, and different sciences here in Wisconsin, and do so in an equitable way, in a way that is inclusive of everyone. And I can't say that we are exclusive to the public sector more so than the private. I've seen conversations that include both. And I think that is necessary for there to be collaboration between public and private sector in order for us to reach our goals. So, yeah, there might be some overlap. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that that's perfectly fine.
Nadia Johnson leads an organization that's focused on workforce development to make the technology sector more inclusive in Milwaukee, also a member of the Governor's Task Force on Workforce and Artificial Intelligence. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can share your insights at any point. The number is 800-642-1234. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Governor's Task Force on Workforce and Artificial Intelligence is a cross-section of Wisconsinites in state government, in technology, education, agriculture, other sectors, advancing policy ideas to help our state stay on the cutting edge of technology transformations. And we examine the work underway. We gather your questions and comments about AI in Wisconsin. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Nadia Johnson is part of the task force and is CEO of Milky Way Tech Hub in Milwaukee. Nadia, when you look at where AI groups are coming from, there's the Google parent company, Alphabet, Microsoft, OpenAI. This is really clustered on the West Coast. What should Wisconsin be doing to enhance the AI business climate here in the heartland?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question. So, you know, I think some of the main things that, you know, we need to be focusing on, I think, for Wisconsin is, one, I think public engagement in education is huge. Okay. So fostering as much public engagement in the AI policy making as possible to ensure diverse perspectives are being considered. I would love for us to start to lead more around addressing workforce impacts of AI. Figuring out solutions around potential job displacement, developing policies for job transition support, retraining and upskilling programs. I think we have an opportunity to really lead the way here in the Midwest for creating solutions to some of the challenges that AI may be presenting to the workforce. And then outside of that, I think some of the conversations that we're having within the committee, again, is just figuring out ways to support different industries, some of the main industries here in Wisconsin, manufacturing and healthcare, agriculture, figuring out how to support these industries in integrating artificial intelligence. And that's going to require some intentional policymaking, whether it be creating grants or tax incentives for startups in the space to integrate artificial intelligence, or creating new programs or tapping into existing tech hubs and funding these tech hubs to support these different industries. But Wisconsin is well positioned, I think, to really lead in terms of developing policy for workforce in the Midwest.
In terms of biases, and AI can demonstrate biases toward groups of people, how can developers ensure the technology grows in an equitable manner? What are you watching for there?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, the things that I care very much about is, you know, fairness and equity in AI. AI is super cool, right? There's a lot of cool things that's happening around artificial intelligence. And as I've mentioned before, it's incredibly impactful to how we navigate society, especially marginalized groups. And so it's super important to make sure that the code that is being developed there's transparency there. So avoid what we call in the industry black box models, where the outputs of these models, nobody really knows exactly how these algorithms or these models work. So more transparency in how the models work. And then making sure that there is diverse representation in the rooms where these models are being developed, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can avoid biases. I mean, we see how insurance companies, we see how AI is impacting the finance sector, and how Black and brown people or marginalized groups can be negatively impacted. And so I think transparency and making sure that there's diverse representation in the developers' teams is incredibly important.
This also traces back to state government. There could be, how do you protect against like unlawful discrimination through algorithms being used to run some of your services?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. These are some of the things that, we have to take into consideration. I think that the things that we're going to see in 2024, AI policy is going to be top of mind for everyone. as we see more advancements in AI products, we're going to have to be more mindful of how these products are being used and who they're impacting and what regulations need to be put in place to make sure that fairness and equity is continues to be at the forefront.
Nadia Johnson with us, recently appointed to the governor's AI task force. As we look to the future of artificial intelligence and its impact on Wisconsin, you can join in with your questions. You can share comments at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Nadia, you mentioned how to support specific industries like manufacturing and healthcare and education. What can AI programs do to help small businesses in Wisconsin succeed?
Yeah, great question. I think some of the main things that comes to mind for me is marketing. So better understanding customers, right? Every company has what I call customer segments. And so leveraging AI to better understand more about a small business customer base and how to best market to them, how to best reach or promote advertisements. Outside of marketing, I mean, there's so many other uses, right? I mean, I use AI to draft up contracts or to draft up press releases, create strategies. And so I think for those who are owners of small businesses, my advice would be to learn a bit more about how to improve in your prompt development. So developing, we call it prompt engineering, developing the right prompts to create strategies, business strategies or business plans for your company. It's incredibly powerful. I've used it many times to build out either marketing strategies or revenue strategies, you name it. So I think that the name of the game is just figuring out how to best ask AI what it is you need.
And very much integrated in your work. As we watch the news here, board members of ChatGPT's parent group, OpenAI, firing CEO Sam Altman, and then Business Insider reporting the firing was over concerns that AI was moving, the technology was moving too quickly. Is AI technology advancing faster than it should?
The reality is that AI technology is out there. It's like kind of like we've opened this box, right? And it's going to continue to advance with or without, you know, OpenAI. So I think that what we need to be more mindful of, or what I think that the general public should be focusing on, is how to keep up, right? What government needs to be focusing on is how to make sure that policies and regulation are keeping up with AI. The pace is going to continue to accelerate. And I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. But I think we need to focus on measures of how to keep up with that pace. Mm. And I think that, you know, Governor Evers' task force is one way to do that.
Nadia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nadia Johnson is CEO of Milky Way Tech Hub, member of the Governor's Task Force on Workforce and Artificial Intelligence. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.